Now we're holding on page Tess in Yevamos, Oischof Gimel. Continuing on topics having to do with marriage, we Mishnah had talked about the mitzvah of getting married and pruvu. So the Gemara has been expanding on that point. So the Gemara is going to bring a bunch of statements from Rebbe Lazar. Some of them have to do with marriage, and some of them are just once we're bringing one of them, then we bring other related ones. So Amar Rebbe Lazar, Kol Adam or Yehudi she'ein lo isha ene Adam. Any person who does not have a wife is not really a full person. Now we learned last time also the printed Gemaras have Yehudi, the Ein Yaakov's Girsa, which is what you find in Kisvei Yad, is Adam. Really, that's how the Gemara says it. The censor has changed it because they didn't like the idea that it's putting down their galochim or what have you. But a person who doesn't have a wife is not really a full person. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Zachor and Akeva Abraham, Hashem created them male and female. Vayikras Shmam Adam, and He called their name together, Adam. So we see that it takes a husband and wife together to have the name Adam. Marsha refers to a Gemara in Eruvin that says that so you have like this after the Chet Tzedas, brings in the Medrash that Adam separated from Chava for 130 years and he's doing Tshuva and so on and so forth. And then now during those 130 years, the Gemara explains any time that Zerah came out from him, then it created Shadim and various other kinds of undesirable creatures like that. Similar to what it sort of talks about in Tanya and in Sifrei Kabbalah and Musar from before that Zerah Levatala creates such creatures. So throughout those 130 years, he was creating creatures that are not B'Tzalmai K'dmusay, only when he got back together with Chava, and then she conceived and gave birth to Shais, then it was B'dmusay K'tzalmai. So now the same idea, in other words, he's not really an Adam. The definition of Adam is supposed to be where he has children who are like him, B'dmusay K'tzalmai, and here when he doesn't have a wife, he's not able to have that. Then, in fact, the Eitz Yosef brings in this connection of a word from the Zohar when it says Adam ki Yakov mikem. The Zohar says that a man who's not married is not able to bring korbanos. Now that's not necessarily a halachic statement. For halacha, there's no such thing. But al pi Kabbalah, there's the idea, in other words, that an unmarried man is not really on the level of Adam, as the Gemara is saying over here, and he's not the right one to be bringing korbanos. Eon Yaakov points out also, look, Adam is created, so Adam is named so after Adama that he was created from, and a person is supposed to Adam la'omo yulad, a person is supposed to work and build up the world. So if he doesn't have a wife, he doesn't have the ability to build up the world with children, and therefore in that sense he's not really being what an Adam should be. Here's another point. A person who doesn't have any land, who doesn't own any land, is also not a full-fledged Adam. As the pasuk says, the heavens are Hashem's heavens, and the earth Hashem has given to mankind. So implying, in other words, if a person does not have any land to speak to call his own, then he's not really an Adam. In fact, Marasha continues in this connection. The Medrash says on it that, so again, we're saying that Shais is the first child of Adam's who can be described as B'dmusay K'tzalmai. What about Cain and Hevel? Well, Cain in particular, Cain was working the land until he killed Hevel, and then Hashem tells him, you're never Arura HaAdama, the land is going to be cursed because of you, and you're going to have to wander around. So in that sense, then Cain is not B'dmusay K'tzalmai, precisely for that reason, because he had no piece of land that he could call his own, so he's not like what Adam should be. Again, Eon Yaakov relates it to the idea that since Adam la'omo yulad, a person is supposed to be living in order to build up the world, a person who doesn't have any land is not able to do that. Tosfos actually points out further on in the sugya, where the Gemara has something negative to say about farm work, a couple of negative things to say about it. So Tosfos points out, what we mean over here is a person at least should have land to build on it a house. To build a house where he can live and to be able to have a small farm or something where he can raise enough grain or whatever for him to live off of. Later on, the Gemara is going to talk about where a person makes his whole work as farm work, then that's not necessarily such a good thing. But here we're talking about the kind of land that at least he has a piece of land to call his own that he can live on, for example. There are places in Chassidus where it talks about that in general we have there's two kinds of we the two kinds of odas makifim, as we call them in Chassidus, two kinds of encompassing lights and energies from Hashem that surround a person rather than you have Ora Mamale, which a person can feel, and then you have Ora Soviv, which is higher than him. They're represented respectively by clothing and a house. Clothing is called Makif HaKorev, in the sense your clothing is cut to fit you, as opposed to a house is Makif HaRochok, because it's not. Your house is not proportionate to your size. And therefore, there's that, and it mentions in Hemshir Samach Vav, it mentions in other places that a house therefore reflects the concept of Yechidah. So therefore, the Gemara is saying over here, if a person doesn't have even the land to have a house on it, then he's lacking that makif arochek. So in that sense, he's not a full adam; he's lacking something of his yechida. By the way, historically, there came a point, eventually there came a point when many Jews didn't own land of their own. There were many in many countries in our long Golos. There's been times when the Goyim didn't allow Jews to own land. So that actually ended up making a difference in halacha as well. In particular, at one point, some hundred years or so after the Muslims had conquered Bavel, on the whole, they treated the Jews halfway decently. But one of their laws was that if you're going to own land and you're not a Muslim, you have to pay very high taxes. So many Jews decided it's not really economical to own land anymore. Up until that point, it was a commonplace thing, like it says in the Gemara here, everybody owns land. And that has many implications in halacha. For example, we have a prusbul. The expectation for when you're going to make a prusbul is that the loiva has some land that you can use as a basis for the prusbul. You have, for example, a woman's ksuba is usually there's a shibud on land, not on metalfilin. A baal choiv, usually the shibud the loan is expected to be paid off with land, not with metalfilin. But there came a point because of this that in Bavel and in other places there ended up being many Jews who actually don't own a square inch of land. So there came a point, actually, the Ga'onim, in the middle of the time of the Tekufas HaGa'onim, the Rosh Yeshiva of Surah and Pompidissa got together, and they made a new takana that from now on, many of these dinim that require karka don't anymore, and the same dinim are going to apply to metalfilin as well. A ksuba and a baal choiv and so forth. When you learn Rambam, you come across in many places in the Rambam when he deals with dinim ominous, in Hilchos Ishus, and in Hilchos Malva Veloiva, and so on and so forth. Over and over, you'll see where the Rambam points out, this is the din of the Gemara, that it involves land, but then you should know, now that we have this takana of the Ga'onim, then you have to take that into consideration as well. Anyway, continues the Gemara, V'omer Rav Elazar, Mai dichtiv esaloi ezer kenegdoi. The Pasuk says, when Hashem is getting ready to create Chava, he says, I will make for Adam a help opposite him. Now, a help suggests, in other words, that she's going to be standing side by side with him, but kenegdoi, opposite him, sounds like she's going to be standing in opposition to him. Plus, also, as the Gemara is going to point out, the word kenegdo can also be related to the word negida, which is an Aramaic word meaning whipping. So what is whipping? Like to whip somebody with to give somebody malchus. Yeah.
You don't know how to do that.
Yeah. So what is it? So zocha oizauta. It means if the person is zoicha, then his wife helps him. Loi zocha. And if he's not zoicha, kenegdo, then she's against him. Now, zocha, usually we would understand that it means exactly that. If he has the proper zchusim, then yeah, and if not, then not. With that said, though, in the Gemara, there's a note in Maseres Hashas from the Goyin Rabbi Yishaya Pick, and here also you have it brought in Yad Yosef that there's a Gemara in Eruvin where Rashi explains the same expression zocha to mean if he has a good mazel. So then, according to that, it's not necessarily dependent on his maisim; it may just depend on his mazel, which really means apichsidus. It means something higher than tam vadas, higher than we can understand. So we don't always understand why it is that sometimes a person ends up with a good wife, and sometimes less so. We're going to have examples in the Gemara as we go through. We're going to have great, great chachamim, tremendous tzaddikim, who had not such good wives. But so then, according to that, the zocha doesn't necessarily mean that he's zoicha, as in with his mitzvahs, but rather it means if Hashem gave him a good mazel for that. In any case, there is
same thing with a woman. It's okay to a man.
So we're talking about, well, this is Hashem is creating. Hashem has already created Adam. He's getting ready to create Chava, and he's saying she's going to be an Ezer Kenegdoi. So it depends on Zocha, however we translate Zocha. There is a vote on it also that Now, on the face of it, what it means is, in other words, if he's not zoicha, if he has a bad mazel, or if he's not zoicha in terms of his mitzvahs or whatever, then his wife is going to harass him and give him a hard time. There is a vort on it that says that actually what it means is, in both cases, she's going to help keep him on the proper path in avoda. If he's doing things right, then she's an ezer. She's a help to him and encourages him in his avoda. Loy zocha, and if he's not acting properly, kinegdo, then she acts and she goes and pushes him back to get back onto the right path rather than stay with what he's doing. You have many, many stories in Midrashim that illustrate the point, Hakol Mina Isha, that the atmosphere in the house and what the husband ends up doing a lot of times depends on his wife. She's the one who often gets him to the good side or chas v'shalom the opposite. So that fits also with this explanation of kenegdoi. So the Amar Rabbi Elazar, the Ikadamri, another version is Amar Rabbi Elazar Rami. Another version of it is not so much that Rabbi Elazar was bothered by the words Ezer versus kenegdoi, but rather he was bothered by the word kenegdoi itself. Siv kenegdoi, we have the Pasuk writes it kenegdoi, which means opposite him, or it can mean parallel to him. The Karinin kenigdoi, but we read it, we can also, because after all, the Sefer Torah is without Nekudas, we can read the word as if it said kenigdoi or kenagdoi or whatever, which is from a Lashon that means to whip, to beat. So zocha kenegdoi, if he's zocha, then his wife is opposite him, meaning parallel to him, loy zocha, and if he's not zocha, menagadtoi, then she whips him and gives him a hard time. So a similar drasha, but instead of learning from Ezer versus kenegdoi, you can learn within the word kenegdoi itself. The Rif points out, for one thing, if it just meant in the simple sense that she's standing alongside him, then the expression would be Ezer linegdoi. Kenegdoi suggests, in other words, that sometimes she could be opposed to him where it's necessary, where it's appropriate. Iyun Yaakov further points out also, this also explains. Now, in general, we know the Torah always uses, the Torah tries to use clean language when necessary. And in addition, the Torah also tries to use the shortest language when necessary. So why go in such a long arichos when Hashem is about to create Chava? And he says, Loi toiv heyoisa odom levadoi, esa loy eza kenegdoi. It's not good that Odom should be on his own, so I'm going to make him an eza kenegdoi. Why not just say simple? Toiv lo adam, it's good for a person that he should have an ezer kenegdoi. So by using the longer expression, loy toiv, ayosa adam levadoi, that's meant to imply that in and of itself, that Hashem is saying, this creation of Chava and creation of woman for man is not going to be always, it's not always going to be on the face of it for his benefit. Sometimes it's going to be necessary for it to be for his detriment in order to get him back on the right path. So the Gemara continues, Ashkechei Rabbi Yosi le'Eliyahu. One time Rabbi Yosi met up with Eliyahu, Omalei, and he asks him, Ksiv esaloi ezer kenegdoi. Here the Pasuk says that I'll make woman in general as a help opposite him. The question is, Rabbi Yosi was bothered by Bame Isha Zauta La'odam. With what does a wife help her husband? Now it seems like, what do you mean with what does a wife help her husband? Everybody knows how their wife helps around the house. So let's learn Eliyahu Hanavi's answer, and then we'll talk about several explanations that Mefoshim give. Omaloi, so Eliyahu answers him, Odam mevi chitin. For example, the man brings home wheat because he harvests the fields and he brings home wheat. Chitin koisis, can he chew on the raw wheat? No, it needs to be made into bread. Pishtan, he brings home flax for clothing. Pishtan loivish, can he wear the raw flax? Also not. So in other words, he brings home the raw materials. His wife is what shapes them into something that he can actually use. Loi nimtis me'ira einav. So doesn't it come out then that his wife enlightens his eyes, umamidate al raglov, and she helps him stand on his feet? So the two things we're mentioning over here, wheat and flax, represent the two basic necessities of a person, food and clothing. Now, so the question is, what is Rabbi Yossi thinking to ask the question? Isn't it obvious how a wife helps her husband? So the Rif explains that. So the Rif explains first of all why does the pasuk use the word Ezer specifically? And really, when it comes to Piri Verivia, it's not. I mean, the two of them are equal partners in it. So it's not so much an Ezer help, which suggests like he's doing the primary thing and she's just helping along. When really, of course, you need the both of them in order to have Basar Echad, in order to have a child, and therefore sort of Leo was explaining to him, consider what she does with preparing things around the house and making them ready. Another explanation is also that another point is also that Anaf Yosef points out, if this Reb Yossi is Reb Yossi Aglili, now really you have in the Gemara, there's Reb Yossi Plain, and who's Reb Yossi Reb Chalafta, and then you have Reb Yossi Aglili. But so here, Anaf Yosef assumes that here we're talking about Reb Yossi Aglili. Now we find in a different Gemara that he had a bad wife. In the end, he ended up divorcing her, actually. So therefore, and the Medrash mentions that she was, that as long as they were married, she was preventing him from doing Achnasas Orchim. He wanted to do Achnasas Orchim, and she was standing in the way of that. So now his question is, I understand, sure, a wife can be helpful in Mila de Alma and in mundane matters, but where do you find here in Mila de Shemaya, in spiritual matters, in mitzvahs, it seems that she's hindering me. So Leo answers, listen, for example, consider you wouldn't have food and clothing if it weren't for your wife. So that alone helps your ruchnius as well. You wouldn't be able to daven and learn and then serve the Eibishter if you didn't have those things. So therefore she is helping you out, the ruchnius as well.
Like it says, money says something up on his feet, right? Stands up on money.
Yeah, that too.
Mm-hmm. The wife brings the money.
Here we're talking about that the husband is the one who earns the money, and generally the wife is the one who prepares things around the house.
The wife brings the money by being sneezed and being a good wife.
There is that too, yeah. What about children? So that's what we're saying. The Rif points out, but then you can't really call it Azer. Azer suggests like you have a primary and a secondary. And here you don't really have. They're both equally sharing in conceiving children. So you can't really call that Azer. There's many places in Chassidus where it talks about the idea. You know, in general, we have Zah and Malchus, and Zah is always personified as the male, and Malchus as the female, and we have the same kind of thing. Malchus, Sierra, Leslem, Gamet, Klum, the moon, also representing Malchus, has no light of its own. It receives everything from the sun, and then it beams it to us. And in the same way, in other words, everything that comes from Zah would just remain there, theoretical, unless it comes through Malchus, and then it brings about practical results in each Olam, and ultimately in our Olam Hazeh Hagashmi. So same idea, in other words, where you have that in that sense, Malchus is the Azer, is the help to Zah, in the same way that the wife is the help to her husband. V'amar Rabbi Elazar. Then Rabbi Elazar says another thing in connection with the creation of Chava. My dichtiv, the Pasuk says, after Chava was created and brought to Adam, Adam says, Zoysapam, this time, etzem me'atzoma yovosu mibisori. It's a bone from my own bones and flesh from my own flesh. Now, in the simple sense, okay, Rashi mentions on the Pasuk that, in other words, we're saying that this is the only time it's ever going to be that woman was created from a piece taken from man's body and shape. And after that, children are going to be conceived and born in a different way. But the Gemara is assuming that Zois HaPam implies here the first time he had relations with Chava, and now he's comparing it with what he had experienced before that. Melamed sheba Adam are called behema v'chaya. From this we learn that Adam was ba on every behema v'chaya, which on the face of it, ba al means he had relations with. But does that mean he actually had relations with the behemas and chayas? We'll talk about in a second. V'loin is skadar adaitoi, but his mind was not put at ease ad sheba chava, until he had relations with chava. Now, on the face of it, the Gemara is saying just that in other words, that he had relations with each one of them to see whether any of them are a suitable mate for him, and he finds that not, and then the Eibishter creates Chava and he has relations with her, and he says, oh, this is what I was looking for. And Marsha, for example, brings from Chizkuni on the Pasuk, who explains how that would have worked in terms of the Gemara elsewhere mentions that when an animal is used for bestiality, it usually sterilizes it. And here, after all, the animals were fertile because afterwards they had children. So there is an understanding in some Mephoshim that we're actually talking literally that Parshati had relations with them. Now you're going to ask, isn't it one of the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach, and of which six of those mitzvahs were already given to Adam HaRishon, that such things are osur? So the answer, according to that, would be that it wasn't osur for him yet until that point. The same way, for example, as it's osur for a brother and sister to get married, but Cain and Hevel married their sisters because that was a one-time exception. So you could say here also it's a one-time exception. With that said, Marsha brings from a sefer called Baal HaNitzochon. This was a late Rishon or early Achron by the name of Reb Yomtev Lipman Milhoisen. He had a lot of times dealings with Goyish officials and whatever, and they would ask him all kinds of questions about they would take things like this Gemara and other things and say, look at, you know, look what a disgusting religion you have or whatever. And he would have to answer them. So he wrote a sefer with all of his answers to them called Sefer HaNitzachon. So he says, no, of course the Gemara doesn't mean that he literally Baalei and he had relations with them. It means that he was considering, he's mentally Baalei, he's thinking through each one of them. What is the nature of each of these animals? Is any of them compatible with me? And no, he finds that not. And then Chava is brought to him by then the Eibishter brings Chava to him and he realizes mentally, oh, she's the one who's compatible with me. The Maharal also discusses this in a couple of places in his Sfarim. He also says that this is one of those Gemaras that seems on the surface to be very strange, but it has deep, deep concepts embedded in it. And he explains, basically, you have a terminology that's used in a lot of places in Sifrei Chakira, in Sfarim of Jewish philosophy, called Choymer and Surah. There's the idea that you have the chomer, you have the physical material of which things in our world are made. And then you have tzura, you have, so to speak, the neshama. Tzura literally means the form, but it means in other words, you have the fact that this thing is not just a certain shape, but it has certain properties, are called its tzura. I guess in a way you could map them kind of onto Gashmius and Ruchnius, but I don't know. In any case, the Maharal says, relative to all the creatures in the world, Adam himself, of course, is a physical creature, but relative to the rest of them, he is the Tzura. He's the Ruchniistic aspect. He has within him the spiritual properties of everything in the world. So now he's looking around among the Choymer, among all the physical animals, and seeing which one of them will I as the Tzura fit with this Choymer. And he finds none of them are suitable. So therefore, and then the Eibishter creates Chava, and he sees, oh, now we have a perfect match of Choymer and Tzura. Onward. What does the pasuk mean when it says, Hashem says to Avraham, all the families of the earth will be blessed in you. Now, in the simple sense, it means exactly that. Like Rashi says on the pasuk, it means that everybody will, when people want to bench their children, they will say, you should be like Avraham, or you should be like the Jewish people. Like Yisimcha, Elikim, Kefraim, Lechem, and Asher. But the Gemara is bothered by, for one thing, why does it say v'nivruchu v'cha? You would expect it to say v'hisbaruchu v'cha, like you have at the end of the Akedah, the end of last week's parasha, v'hisbaruchu v'zaracha koyo gayei ha'aretz. Why over here v'nivruchu v'cha? So it means, so we're going to understand the word v'nivruchu, not meloshin benching, but meloshin grafting, like hamavrich as a gethen, when a person takes a branch of a grapevine and bends it down into the ground to eventually break off and form a new clone of the original plant. So it means, Omalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu LaAvraham, Hashem is telling Avraham, Shtei Brichos Tovos Yeshli LaHavrich Bach. I have two good plantings, two good grafts that I want to graft into your family. They come from other nations, but they're going to be grafted into your nation. And that's Maharsho says, that's why Kol Mishpachas Adama. These two nations, means Rus HaMoyaviyav and Nama HaAmonis. Rus from Moyav and Nama from Amon, they eventually got grafted into the Jewish people. They became Giyoris. Rus, we learned about earlier in this Masechta, about her Geirus. Nama, and she was the great-grandmother of David HaMelech. Nama HaAmonis was one of the wives of Shloimeh, and she was the mother of Rechavam, Shloimeh's successor. Now she herself, many Mephoshim talk about that she wasn't necessarily such a great Sadekus herself. In fact, some of the Mephoshim say that she was downright a Rashas and she influenced Rechavam badly. Nonetheless, though, Rashi says, at least you have, there were many kings of Malchus Beis David and eventually Mashiach and Nevi'im and so forth who descended from her. So in that case, then it's a good thing that she joined the Jewish people, even if, in other words, the implication is even if she herself wasn't such a great person. There is actually an interesting thing. The Sefer Asorah Ma'amores from the Namami Fano brings a medrash, brings a very odd story from a medrash about how we know there was a period of time when Shlomo was thrown off the throne by Ashmedai. So he tells the whole story of it.
This was the mother of Shlomo.
What?
She was the mother.
She was the wife. She was one of Shlomo's wives. She was the mother of Rechavam. So there's a whole story tells a whole story based on a medrash of how she's the one who brought about that Shlomo was restored to the kingship, and therefore, so then the whole future of Malchus Beis David descends from her, not only biologically, like Rashi is saying, but also that if it weren't for her, Shlomo would have remained off the throne, and that would have been the end. That would have been the end of the dynasty of David. So in that sense, then you can say that there's a certain mila to her. Whatever the case, the point is we're saying that Hashem is telling Avraham long in advance that from those two nations there are going to come two new grafts that are going to be engrafted onto the Jewish people and become an essential part of them. Marshall points out the word kol mishpachos adama means even you have these nations which in and of themselves, Ammon and Moav, are not supposed to intermarry into the Jewish people. The men never, the women, okay, you have Ammoni v'lo Ammonis, but so therefore, so Hashem is saying that even those nations that are so far removed from having anything to do with the Jewish people, and the Pasuk says, lo sidra shloimim v'tevosam, don't even try to make peace treaties with them, don't nothing. Nevertheless, Hashem is saying, I have my plans, and two women from those nations are going to end up joining the Jewish people. So the Maharal also expands on that. He says the vote is, since the Eibishter is saying I need to create something completely new over here, Malchus Beis David has to be something completely new, so you can't say that it should descend from any, it can't just descend from within the born Jewish people themselves. That wouldn't be something new. That's a continuation of what was. You can't even have that it should descend from Giyotis of other nations, because Vayter, the Giyotis from other nations are allowed to freely intermarry into the Jewish people, so therefore you can't really call it something new. When you have people from Ammon and Moav who are as distant as possible from the Jewish people in their origins, even that they originally came from Znus between Loit and his daughters, as we learned in last week's parasha, and that they're barred in general from intermarrying into the Jewish people. And then the Eibishter is saying, still, I'm going to arrange things that two of them are going to end up joining. That you can call a genuinely new thing, and that's what Malchus Beis David and ultimately Mashiach comes from. That the Gemara continues. Kol mishpachos adama, when we're saying that all the families of the earth will be blessed through you, Avraham, now we're taking the word v'nivruchu more in the literal sense of being blessed. So it means afilu mishpachos adores ba'adama, even families, even nations that live in the ground, for example, in caves or whatever. So you know, like completely uncivilized people, ein mishpachos ela b'shvil Yisrael. Even they are given bracha by Hashem only for the sake of the Jewish people. We may not always see it. We may not always realize how is it that some tribe of whatever in the jungles someplace. Why is the Eibishter making them be successful? Ultimately, we're saying that's only for the sake of the Jewish people. Somehow, it's going to, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, somehow, over it may even be hundreds or thousands of years later or whatever, but somehow one thing is going to lead to another, which is going to be for the sake of the Jewish people. So in this connection, the Gemara says, when it says kol goyei ha'aretz, you have another pasuk where Hashem says that all the nations of the earth will be blessed in the schus of Avraham. That means, so we're not just talking on land. Afilu sfinos haboris migalya la'aspamya, even ships that travel from Galia to Aspamya. Now, Aspamya is Spain. Galia can mean France. But the Aruch HaSholem points out France and Spain have a land border. You don't really need to have ships go from one to the other. So rather, he explains Gallia as northern Italy. Whatever the case, these are places that at the time when the Gemara was written, there weren't a lot of Jews in either of those places. If you wanted to say nowadays, you might say, you know, between two Favrofina Pacific Islands or something or whatever, where there are next to no Jews over there. But even then, Einin Mesporchus, Ela B'Shvil Yisrael, they are blessed only for the sake of the Jewish people. Somehow, this is going to come out of it through the Eibishter has his ways of making things happen. That's going to be for the sake of something that's going to benefit the Jewish people. Okay, the Gemara continues. V'omer Abelazar, Tosfos actually points out the drosha where we say that it means ships is called goyei ha'aretz. In other words, even the ones these sailors, they don't spend very much time on the land. Most of the time, they spend on their ships on the sea. Nevertheless, they're included in kol. Even they are having brachos only for the sake of the Jewish people. Iyun Yaakov also adds another point as well. The Gemara mentions there's a Mishnah at the end of Kiddushin that mentions, and the Gemara also mentions it in Nida, that sailors are usually Hasidim. They're usually sailors. They're constantly traveling in dangerous places. They're constantly exposed to danger from storms and pirates and whatnot. And therefore, they tend to be, even if they're Goyish sailors, they tend to be more frum and more connected to Hashem, at least however they can understand him. We see, for example, look at the sailors in the story of Yonah, where as soon as a storm blows up, they start davening to their getchkes, and the next thing they realize is that the Eibishter must have caused this. And in the end, the Medrash says they all became Geirim. Anyway, so the point is, so even sailors who themselves have a certain degree of schus because of that, nevertheless, when they're blessed, it's not because of their own schusim, it's for the sake of the Jewish people.
Yeah, but being on the sea is scary and dangerous, so they dive
for what
they need.
Okay. V'amar Rabbi Elazar, so Rabbi Elazar also says, this is also related to this point about sailors, asidin kol bala umenuyas shiyamdu ala karka. There's going to come a point when all the people who are doing business, for example, on ships, are going to stand on the ground, meaning they're going to abandon their ships and they're going to go and start getting involved in farm work. So Maharsho explains on the basis of the next piece that Rabbi Elazar is going to say, that he's going to say that ein lacha umnus pchusim in akarka, there's no more degrading kind of work than farm work. So the idea is, in other words, there's going to come a point when people are not going to be looking to earn a huge amount of money. They're just going to be, they'll do whatever menial work is available, even farm work, which as Rabbi Elazar is going to go on to say, is the lowest of the low. They're still going to do that. Then Eighth Yosef actually takes it kind of the other way around. He points out there's a Gemara in Shabbos that mentions that the word emunas is related to farm work, and the Tosfos brings there from a Yerushalmi that says mamin b'chei ha'olamim b'zereya. A person trusts in Hashem and he plants. He doesn't know whether his crops are going to be successful. He plants. He makes his keli and he davens to the Eibishter for rain. So therefore, the idea is there's going to come a point, fakir, you're going to have that people are going to abandon all their various kinds of work where they think, koichi va'otzim yadi, I'm the one who made it happen. And they're going to realize, you know what, we have to do the kind of work that requires a lot of reliance on Hashem constantly, namely farm work.
There's a capitulo in Tehillim that says, when you eat from the work of your hands, right?
You give kapecha yourself,
yeah. That's a big thing that you're actually doing.
Yeah. Anyway, so now we're saying, these various businessmen and whatever are going to stand on the ground and get involved in farm work. Shenema, we have a pasuk in Yechezkel. The context of the pasuk is the Yechezkel is describing the city of Tsur, the famous city of Tsur, Tyre. Nowadays it's in Lebanon. In those days it was a big flourishing commercial place. Everybody came there for business from all over the known world. So it can be described at great length. So Yechezkel compares it to a beautiful ship laden with merchandise which gets caught in a storm and sinks. So then he describes how everybody's going to be very sad about what happened to this great commercial center of Tsur. And then he says, "V'yodume oni oniyaseihem kol tofsei moshet." He says, all the ones who hold the oars are going to get down off their boats. Malochim, the sailors, kol chov lehayom, all the people, all the shipmen of the sea, all the ones chovle means the ones who handle the chavolim, the ropes. Ela oretz yamodu, they will stand on the ground. So in other words, we're saying the yodu, Rashi says loshen yurida, they're going to become poor, and therefore instead of doing this flourishing business and trading and whatnot, instead they're going to be poor and they're going to be doing farm work. So, Eon Yaakov actually wonders, I mean, the context of the pasuk again, is talking about the defeat of Tsur, the fall of Tsur. What does that have to do with that we're saying in the future, this is everybody's going to be like this? It means, Rapashkus, at that time, when Tsur was destroyed, first you have Nebuchadnezzar's army conquered it, and then plundered it, and then Mephoshim Aksulid Rashi explains over there, based on a medrash, that then the waves of the sea came and swept away whatever was left, and everybody's mourning over it. So where are we getting? Where's Rebbe Elazar getting from that? That this means something that La'osid Lover, it's going to be this way by everybody. So he says, because Rebbe Elazar himself also says in a Gemara in Sanhedrin that what's a clear simon that Mashiach is almost here is when there's a terrible depression and nobody's able to do any business and nobody's able to earn any money. But then on the other hand, he continues, when the farms and the fields and the vineyards will be giving food aplenty. So therefore, so that's exactly what he's saying over here. Therefore, when these people realize there's no sense in us going and traveling in ships and when wheeling and dealing and whatever, instead we would do well to be involved in farm work, then you know that the pasuk is implying that that's when you know Mashiach is on his way. So V'omer Rabbi Elazar, in l'cha umnus, p'chusim in akarka. So Rabbi Elazar says in this connection, you see there's no lower kind of work than farm work. Shenem v'yodu, as it says, they will go down, implying that they're going to become poor. Now, here's where Tosfos points out. Didn't we say before that if a person doesn't have karka, he's not an Adam? So Tosfos says that's the distinction. Before we were talking about a person needs a piece of land to call his own where he can build a house on and have a small plot of land that he can grow food for his family or whatever. Here we're talking about where a person who mainly spends his time on farm work. So after that, Rebbe Elazar is saying there's nothing lower and more degrading than that. So in this connection, the Gemara tells a couple of stories like that. Rabbi Lozer chazilai hi ara deshodi bekarbel apusiy. Rabbi Lozer saw once a piece of land where it had been where there was karba in it along the width. Rashi says two explanations. One is that karba means the person had planted cabbage seeds, but he had planted lapusia along the width of the field, which is wasteful. It's better to plant them in long furrows along the length of the field. Rashi's second explanation is the word karba is the Aramaic word for plowing. Same idea. When you're plowing a field, you want to generally plow along the length of the field. That's more than you're using the land more efficiently when you plow along the width, then you're wasting a lot of the land that you can't now use for planting. The Meiri actually has a third explanation that he saw there was a pile of produce that filled up the entire width of the field from one side to the other. So apparently the guy had a bumper crop. In any case, Amalei, Rabbi Lozer says to the farmer, even if you were to do it along the length, so even if you were to plant along the length, according to Rashi's first explanation, or plow according to the length, according to the second explanation, or even if you had a pile of produce that was so large that it filled up the entire length of the field, even so, with any of those, hafuchi beiska tavminach, to do business with buying and selling would be better for you, and you would earn more from it. It would be a better use of your time and your energy. Because again, like he said, that karka is the most degrading kind of omnis, the most degrading kind of work. So Maharsha, by the way, mentions in this connection, we find in Mitzrayim, we have Vaymoros Chayeim, they embittered their lives, Vachomer Levenim, where first they made them work with mortar and bricks. And then when it says Vachol Avoid Basoda, with all work in the field, means they were aware of what Rabbi Lazar is saying over here. So they went beyond. Not only are they degrading the Jews by forcing them to work with bricks and mortar and building, but they went beyond that and forced them even to work at farm work, whereas Rabbi Lazar is saying is the most degrading thing to do. Similarly, the Gemara says, Rav al Beni Shibuli or Shibli. One time Rav was passing by a field where there were stalks of grain growing, and Chazanu de Konaifin, and he saw that the stalks are waving in the wind, which is a very nice sight. The Gemara even mentions elsewhere, actually, that you have to be careful not to give somebody an ayin hara if you look at his field. Then, when all the grain is standing over there and ready to be harvested, you could end up giving him an ayin hara. So Rav sees this kind of thing. It looks like the field has had a nice sized crop and everything's ready over there. But similarly, he says to the people, he says to the stalks of grain themselves, no matter how much you're going to wave, but still to do business would be better than you. In other words, again, the guy would do better if he wasn't spending so much time on his farm work, and instead he would invest his money into something else. Further in this connection, Omar Rava. Maya zuz beiska. If a person has 100 zuz invested in a business, kol yom a bistra b'chamra, then he'll be able to afford every day. He'll be able to eat meat and wine. Maya zuz ba'ara. On the other hand, if he has 100 zuz invested in land, milcha v'chafura, then he's not going to have much to live off of. He's going to have to eat chafura, which Rashi describes as a type of grass with a little bit of salt. Not only that, but if he's working on farm work like that, he's going to end up having to lie on the ground to watch the field to make sure nobody sneaks in and steals his grain or whatever. Meiri says also it may mean because he's going to be homeless. And it's going to cause, there's going to be arguments. So Rashi says, again, he's going to end up arguing with people because he's going to suspect people of trespassing on his field or whatever. It can also mean because the Gemara mentions elsewhere in Bava Metzia that Shalom Bayis depends on the supply of food in the house. So here where he's not really making ends meet because he's not doing very well in his farming. So therefore it ends up causing Shalom Bayis issues between him and his wife. So all these things taken together, in other words, the Gemara is saying that farm work is not really the best thing for a person to do. Again, like Tosfos says, it's one thing for a person to have a small holding where he's going to grow food for his family, but to have a farm where he's going to go and 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 then sell it or do whatever with it is not necessarily the best use of his resources. So we'll continue on that theme tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gu'ula. It's today. What is today? Tes Zayin Cheshvan. Thank you. Okay. So you have there's a pasuk in the Novi Zechariah that says that Limos Mashiach, 10 men of every nation of the Goyim are going to go and grab on to the corner of the garment of a Yid, and they're going to say, let us go with you because we've heard Hashem is with you. So Rashi explains on the pasuk, based on a Gemara and Shabbos, it means you're going to have 10 people from every one of the 70 nations and one for each corner. That means that a Yid who's careful with the mitzvah of tzitzis is going to have 2,800 goyim ready to serve him la'asid lavay. So now the Rebbe says in a sicha, you're going to ask, what is a Yid going to do with 2,800 servants? So the answer is that's one of the questions that we can ask Mashiach, and he'll answer it. Okay, continuing on halachos of animals and on Shabbos. So we've been talking about various issues involving with animals. Now you have dinim as far as feeding animals on Shabbos. We know, of course, you do have to feed them, and in fact, you have the din that you have to feed your animals before yourself. But you have certain dinim that apply as far as that. For example, you can't measure out food for them. So you estimate the amount and you give it to them. Then there are certain kinds of things that certain malachas that you can't do with animal food on Shabbos. So an example that he gives over here in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch is, for example, you have, let's say, hard pumpkins. You'd be allowed to cut them up for an animal to eat on Shabbos, as long as, of course, they were picked before Shabbos. But if they're soft and the animal could eat them like that, then you're not allowed to cut them up. So this is negeya as far as pet foods, for example, what kinds of things you would and wouldn't be allowed to mix or prepare on Shabbos to be able to feed them. Now, what you can have is the animal itself can do, for example, can do malacha in order to eat. So, for example, if you have a cow or sheep or whatever, you can have it stand where there's grass growing and it's going to pick grass on Shabbos and eat it. You don't have to worry about that. So the Medrash says on that, when it says l'man yanuach, in order that your animals should rest, that it would be tsar for the animal if you were to lock it up and not allowed to do that. Adrab, that's the nayach, that's the rest for the animal that you're allowing it to do that. Now what you do have to do, though, is if the grass is mukta, for example, a goy picked it on Shabbos, then you're not allowed to have the animal stand there to eat. But the Alter Rebbe adds, based on relevant Gemaras, you can, for example, prevent it from going any other way, like stand in its way whenever it tries to turn some other way, so it winds up going there and eating on its own. That you would be allowed to do.
It's always good to rest the Nefesh HaBahamas.
Yes.